Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Leaderching. I'm very excited because my guest today comes from two different worlds. Her name is Yixian Chen. She is an IP lawyer at Jones & Co. and is based in Toronto. Hi, Yixian. How are you?
Hi, Mirza. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. You know, looking forward to the summer break, hopefully starting soon, and going, you know, into the new normal, hopefully soon.
Yeah, same here. Things are looking up in Toronto, and I guess we're generally feeling happy and tasting some sense of normalcy here.
Excellent. That's great news. So, Yixian, I introduced you at the very beginning as someone that comes from two different worlds. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Well, as you know, I'm a Toronto-based and Chinese native lawyer. I was born and raised and legally trained in China. And then I studied law and lived in Germany for a while. And then I moved to Canada to further my law studies and ended up practicing law here. Most of my work is of international nature. And now I lead a team in our firm that primarily work in, you know, cross-border IP litigation and enforcement.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And it sounds like very, very interesting what you're doing. Let's maybe dive directly into the first question of our conversation. I'm curious to know, Yixian, what did you want to become when you were a child?
Well, when I was a child, I wanted to be a musician. You know, growing up and born and raised and growing up in China in 1990s, it was a time when we had this 9-year mandatory program, which was implemented in both rural and urban areas in China. And that created a lot of competition amongst kids who wanted to have better grades and go to better schools. So parents at that time were very much interested in signing up their kids for extracurricular activities. And my parents did music for me. So as a result, I started playing music when I was 5 years old and sat in school bands for 10 years and got quite good at it. So for the longest time, I thought that's going to be my career.
Nice. And so you were playing in bands. What type of instruments were you playing?
I was playing two very ancient and traditional Chinese string instruments.
And how was that for you, like playing instruments that are quite ancient and, you know, relate to that type of music, mm-hmm. whereas you were a young kid in, you know, in, mm-hmm. in a modern world, so to say?
Yeah, it I didn't really understand when I just started. I didn't really understand the meaning of the music. I only practiced those techniques. But as I grow, I realize that, you know, music is just a secondary extension of the mind. Like, I feel like that's a way for me to kind of find the connection between me and maybe those music, those composers who wrote the music thousands of years back.
Yeah, it's a nice way to look at how what music does, right? And how mm-hmm. it translates and touches us somehow, mm-hmm. because it touches us on a different level than maybe other arts.
Totally.
So you wanted to become a musician as a kid, but then things started changing. Can you maybe tell us a little bit as to how this evolution took place and what influenced it?
Well, as I grew, maybe in my high school years, I realized that I would rather keep, you know, playing instruments as my hobby. Because I really enjoy, you know, playing for my family or close friends. And as to how I got into law, I was trying to think how, but I feel like I just
you're stumbled. Back now.
Yeah, I'm back.
But this was This was on my phone because someone tried to call. So this
Okay.
is so just okay, let's now go back to so I said my piece about the question. So can you just now start answering it, like why it was that you went into something different?
Okay. So I got into something different. I think started in late in my high school years where I realized I would like to keep playing instruments as my hobby and play for my family and friends. But as to how I got into law, on hindsight, I felt like I kind of stumbled across it because my parents, well, they work in the field of medicine and education. So for me, being a lawyer kind of came out of nowhere. Though I do remember when I was younger, somehow I had this ideological thinking and a very vague belief that being a lawyer could help me understand how the world works. It's a vague, very vague concept. So, well, but anyhow, I thought I'd start with that, and I can always, change my profession after law school. But I just grew to love it. And I think right now, I think I found my value in my current line of work.
Excellent. So you have told us a little bit about your upbringing in China, about also kind of, some of the circumstances that existed at the time, and also how you switched into actually finally becoming a lawyer. Now you mentioned you lived in China, you lived also for a certain period of time in Germany, and now you are actually based in Toronto. When you look back like to those years, I'm sure that you had different type of people that you looked at or their, or that for you represented role models. Can you maybe share like from the three different perspectives a little bit as to what were the characteristics of those people that you kind of followed as role models?
Funny that you asked that, Mirza. Because, as you know, with my background, I always feel like it's hard for me to find a defined career or like defined path to grow or copy someone's success story. So, I always look for people who do international work, for example, or have, very diversified background to find my inspiration. And funny you ask, because the work that you do and the causes that you care about give me so many inspirations, for me to think about and for me to learn. So you are exactly the type of person that I, look up to, and you are my role model.
Well, that's very kind of you, Yishan. But you know that when we met, actually, I learned so many things from you too, and we had like a fantastic time when we were in St. Petersburg. And I think, it was a really a mutual exchange of experiences and knowledge. So I feel very, thankful for this coincidence having brought us together and us now being able to have this conversation. One thing that I particularly liked about what you said is the fact that often enough, it's not easy for someone to find someone to look up to or to kind of follow, because one feels that, first of all, we are all unique, but secondly, also is because you have a different type of upbringing or kind of, life experience that brought you to different countries. Hence, you always carry with you a certain cultural baggage that doesn't fit necessarily the culture where
Correct.
you are. And then you add the new cultural elements to your former culture, and then at the
Totally.
third and fourth place, and so on, it's kind of more like, bricks that get assembled one on top of other, and they all become somehow a part of who you are. And then obviously it's very difficult. Who do you kind of figure out could be someone that has the similar experience or life story? So I fully understand that. Let me know, you have been now working for several years, even though you're, I think, my youngest actually podcast guest. So I let people f find mo out more about your age on their own, but but I'm curious to know, you're still being rather young, but you still have had
several different type of leaders that, you know, that managed you or that were in your firm, different roles that you had. Is there any type of characteristics of leadership that you particularly think are necessary for good leadership to take place?
Yes. Well, like you said, it takes a lot of good qualities to be a good leader. But I can only speak from my experience. And one of the things that is, really close to my heart is that I feel a good leader should have very clear cultural awareness and empathy, especially in an international workplace. I know those are probably words that popped up in your program, or maybe it's kind of a vague term. So I'll try to put it in a more in, into more context. I work in a highly diversified firm. Your employees and juniors are highly educated, mostly dual qualified lawyers or lawyers to be, and are mostly immigrants with different levels of cultural adaptabilities into the Canadian culture. So understanding the cultural background of the team members is crucial. Nowadays, I think globally, with the development of so-called mega cities, there are more cosmopolitan or international elites in workplaces. Though those boundaries of nationality seem a bit blurred now, especially in an organization, but to work more efficiently as a team, provide for a leader to provide support and bring fairness into the workplace, it requires leaders to, be truly empathetic and be sensitive to different behaviors and cultural norms of the employees and give support and recognition according to that understanding.
I think what you're saying is so true, and I don't and the interesting part of it, I think it's definitely valid for, you know, big metropoles and, you know, capital cities of countries. But what I see happening is that even in smaller institutions, even, you know, in smaller cities, what we're seeing is that because of the pandemic, there is this new type of work where people are more freelance, or they're kind of, you know, connect virtually all the time and are kind of, you know, contractors that not necessarily go into permanent working arrangements anymore. But the diversity of actually the associates is increasing. And I think we all, I think we both agree, but I know that many of our listeners agree as well, that the complexity of the issues that we are facing, be it on a legal, but also be it just in a realistic day-to-day commercial level of what we have to deal with, has increased a lot. And in order to kind of tackle those issues, it's definitely not enough anymore to just have one view of the problem, but you need to have a broader view. And so in many companies, what I'm seeing is that lawyers are not talking to lawyers only anymore, but they are bringing in IT specialists, they're bringing in engineers, they're bringing tech people in, and sometimes we bring like so-called futurists because they kind of have, you know, so it's kind of a very different way of working than when we were trained, where we were trained as people as specialists and knowing the law by heart and jurisprudence by heart and then applying that. Our days were like, we need to understand others and we need to connect with others to understand the problem, to assess and then provide a solution to the client.
For
And
sure.
what you're saying from a leadership perspective is, I think, very valid because in order to make functioning teams, you know, in order to make teams work, there needs to be a fundament where people feel respected and understood. And this understood starts by, you know, they need to feel like people are listening actively to what they're saying, and also keeping in mind all the time what you mentioned, which is the cultural differences that each of us brings with us, right? And I think that's super interesting because I think we often forget actually, because when we are in this kind of English speaking environment where we all speak English and we all kind of have the feeling that we speak the same language because we, for instance, both of us I'd be lawyer, then we feel there is a, you know, immediate connection, because our industry or our kind of area of expertise is similar. But then actually, there is still a world of differences, right? Because there is this cultural differences. And you mentioned one word that I really like, which is also the adaptability. I think sometimes we pretend that everyone should be adaptable to the same extent. And we forget that adaptability is the same as any other characteristic, is very unique and personal, and that it's actually up to the person itself to decide up to which level he or she wants to adapt, right? It's not something we can demand. I'm not sure what you think about that aspect, about this adaptability kind of value and benchmark towards others.
It's funny, because I've gone through a process where, you know, think about me moving out of China at the age of 18 in a new environment. So I kind of unconsciously and wholeheartedly want to adapt. And as a result, a lot of people nowadays, and a lot of people in North America would say that, oh, Yuxian, did you really come from a totally different culture? You've adapted so well. And then, like you said, I chose to, or maybe consciously or unconsciously, this is the result. But as I grew more mature, I feel like I would like to preserve certain values that was in my upbringing, the certain very good values, Chinese values. You know, I read Chinese philosophy that I would like to have with me. And that's not a popular, those are not popular opinions, perhaps in North American culture. But like you said at the beginning, that's just part of me. And sometimes and coming back to leadership, I think a good leader would appreciate that. A good leader will see where you're coming from and you know, make you feel seen and appreciated that way.
Yes, I think that's a little bit where sometimes it's difficult for managers, right? And I'm sure you also have had the experience that giving recognition is difficult, because you really need to understand first what the other person is going to appreciate and understand as recognition, because it's not, you cannot just give the same type of recognition to everyone. So some people love it when you praise them in front of others. Some people hate that. They prefer like to have formal email being sent to them. You know, so there are many different ways as to how you can recognize people. And I think one of the constant challenges that I see today is that because we are in this more diverse and more flexible setup, business-wise, it just requires us to really constantly being looking out for those, first of all, for our own biases, right? Because we automatically go into one direction, assuming that's the right way to do things. And that's one thing. And the other thing is also, for me, very often I just, I need to challenge myself and question, was that really what the person needed, right? Or is it just what you think you would like to hear from your manager? So it's a fine line.
Exactly. And then, like you said, it's, you know, a lot of bigger organizations, they're bringing in or consulting with different types of people, like you mentioned, IT specialists or futurists. And another interesting I found out lately in recent years is that big corporations, they're bringing anthropologists. Well, anthropology is, you know, my interested area, that I sometimes read books in that topic, especially on comparative cultural studies. What I find interesting is the openness, you know, for leaders, the openness to learn, to use the discipline maybe provided, to use the rules and tools maybe provided in a different discipline, like anthropology, to understand, to build a structure of understanding, the structure of understanding where are people coming from. You know, we talked about high context and low context society. Not to try to put people into those boxes, but at least you have an understanding of their, you know, their people's intention and their behavioral pattern. And that helps leaders to better understand teammates. I like to use this example of the concept of humility. And that's something that I encounter a lot in workplace. you know, the concept of humility or modesty are very different, I would say, in high context and low context cultures. I mean, I see that you're nodding. Perhaps you have similar experience. So in high context cultures, I would say, for example, China and Japan and some Latin American cultures, this concept basically means to look down upon yourself or look up to others, learn from your teammates. But in North American culture, a relatively low context culture, the concept of humility basically means being modest, and it's for one not to have an overly high opinion of oneself. So because of those different understandings in those, you know, seemingly straightforward virtues, people behave differently in workplaces. And I have a real life example that I encountered in a workplace where I have a junior came from high context culture, who's very hardworking, you know, doesn't take enough credits for herself and never brag about her achievements. So in that case, I tried to pay attention to what she did and tried to make sure that she feels seen and appreciated of her good work. And as a result, I understood that she felt very motivated and excelled herself at work.
Thanks for sharing that, you know, real life example, first of all. I think there were a couple of things that I liked about your statement. The first thing is that it's not necessarily because one studies and collects knowledge about cultures, like the concepts of high and low, you know, context cultures, or because we look into sociology, anthropology, for instance, that because once we have, you know, a certain level of capacity to use those tools, that we necessarily need to then start qualifying people. I think that's a risk, right? Because I think those tools are there to support you, but they're not there to help you categorize people, right? Because that's the opposite of what we want to do. We want to acknowledge differences and create an environment where everyone can be its true self to the highest extent possible. Sometimes what I see happening is that as soon as we know how to manage the tools and have an understanding, we're trying to start to label people, sticking, you know, the nice labels on people, or trying to fit them into boxes, and feel very weird when we can't, because like one person doesn't fit into a specific box. And I think it was really good that you mentioned that it's not because we start to know those tools that needs to lead us into the labeling. The other thing that really resonated with me is this concept of humility and modesty, right? Because this is something that in my role as a mentor, I have come across, for instance, far more female junior associates struggling with not speaking up about their good work and about their hard work and, you know, accomplishments and achievements. And this was kind of, you know, it's probably both low and high context cultures, but it surprised me that it had something to do with gender, because I saw that it was clearly much easier for men to speak about their accomplishments than it was for the ladies. And so that's why I got interested then in this gender topic, which is actually what I want to ask you about next. So you come from you were born and raised in China and did your studies there, and now you live in Canada. When you look at the role of female in the society, where is it that you have the feeling that, you know, there is differences maybe, and where do you think we still have to kind of support the gender equality cause, you know, to progress, to achieve a higher level of equality?
I think, let's approach the first part of the question first, as to where do I see those, you know, potential inequalities. Coming from China, I could say that in my generation, the millennials, I can say that there is still a perceived ideas that women should have certain types of career and have children before certain age. There's a term called 剩女, and the direct translation is leftover women. That's a quite derogatory term because it's used to, refer to women who remains unmarried in their late 20s and beyond. But then that was in the past now, I would like to think, because in my generation, the millennials, the pressure is slightly lower, because slightly lighter, because there are many people, many women, who are very successful, and they're redefining what's their traditional view of happiness and a good life. And they're showing to those, older generations that one can live a happy and fulfilling life being an unmarried female. So I think that's where I see a little bit of inequality, in my experience and in my time, like as a millennial. For moving forward, I think for me, what's very important is for, anyone in a society, especially for leaders, to encourage the thinking of finding the best person for the job based on competency and regardless of gender. Because I think discrimination based on criteria that are not directly related to the job or the task that you're facing is an invitation to inefficiency. It's tough enough to get people working together and integrated to the team without putting those artificial barriers.
I hear you. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, even though we know that there is a very strong feminist, current that says that we first have to even out the play field before we can all play the same game. Because, and this is not only about gender, but it's actually in general about minorities. When we bring up this criterion about, let's make it about competencies and who is the best. What we are hearing is that the criticism that we are hearing in that respect is saying, well, it would be good if everyone could actually access even the opportunity to apply for the jobs. And once these opportunities are open for everyone, then we can say it should only be about the competency. But how they show it, like kind of visually, is to say, and now I'm just simplifying, but let's assume you would be like steps, and on the highest step, you would just see the man because they are just white and educated and and male. And then you have the steps underneath, it would start, to be populated by the minorities. And what people are saying is, as long as we don't find a way to kind of all be at the same level of the step, the highest step, to access opportunities, we still have to work and do that. But I think in principle, I agree with you that if we add that complexity of positive discrimination to the world of work, it creates a lot of tension, right? Because then you don't know based on what you're chosen. And actually, I know that a lot of female leaders wasn't just because they're female. They want to be chosen because they are the best at what they do and not because they're female leaders, right? So I fully concur with you there. I think one thing that I think it was interesting about what you said about the millennials in China and what I really like, and I would like just our listeners to think about this once more, is that it is seldom that actually society changes and things get better. It's often enough people changing it and making changes and showing to the others that there is other options than the standard option that existed for a very long time. So I think what you said about how there is now female professionals that are showing that it's not needed to be married or to follow a specific path to be happy and successful. That this is starting to be acknowledged because women are doing it, right? And maybe other minorities are doing it as well in other contexts. But I like to remind ourselves that change starts with ourselves, right? It's not something that we cannot wait until the law changes or until mentality change, but more that we have to contribute to that in a kind of constant way, right? By sharing our stories, by telling how things are changing, and then for others to be inspired to try and do the same.
Yeah, I totally agree. The world is changing. Young people are growing up. Young people are changing. You know, we're young people are less, much more international nowadays and less accepting of those, you know, discrimination based on the backgrounds of cultures or gender. And then I think it's wise for leaders to, you know, realize that if they want to attract young people to their team, they should cater to the values that are very important to those younger generations.
That's an excellent point, actually. And it's probably very nicely, you know, bringing us to my last question. But I really think it's important to remember for in order for us to attract the next generation of professionals, in our case, it's in IP, but there is many other industries, we have to look out for what is actually important to the new generation. It's not so much about what we like and what we believe would be the talent that we have, but much more about trying to kind of put together those things, right? The interests of the firms, companies, and industries we work for, and then about this generation of young professionals coming up and seeing how we can match those in the best possible way. So thanks for sharing that, Jishan. So my last question to you would be, and I know you're super young, so I'm not asking you to go back to you know, when you were 10. But let's assume you would go back, like, you know, to your very early 20s. What type of advice would you give yourself?
Laughing because that's less than 10 years ago. But but I guess, you know, the thing I always tell myself and remind myself is to, you know, be okay with the uncomfortable feeling when you're growing up and being different. And you know, try to embrace the feeling of not fitting in. Embrace it with ease. Because if what you're doing is working for you, you know, maybe you're doing something great. At least for me, maybe it's too early to tell. Give me 10 more years. But I think I would like to treat, you know, see my path, you know, in a way where, in a way that, you know, I embrace those differences.
I think that's excellent advice because, and I don't think it actually only applies to young people, right? I think that myself, I continue to have those moments where I feel uncomfortable because I have the feeling that I don't fit in or that I don't, you know, fulfill the expectations of either society or my family or just my professional environment. And I think I like the idea of the advice is, you know, embrace it. Just, you know, go for it because actually you might be just doing very well, even though it feels uncomfortable because you are who you are. And that goes back a little bit to the fact that hopefully we can all kind of strive to be ourselves, the most authentic ourselves that we can be, persons that we can be, and hence also by that example, give room for others to be their true selves, right? Because that's the idea, right? The more we kind of can feel comfortable with being ourselves, even though we feel uncomfortable because we don't fit maybe. At the same time, I'm always thinking, I hope that with that, someone else will feel kind of, oh, there is room for me to be different and to bring something else in, which maybe nobody thought about, but which can still add value to the conversation, to the to work, or to something else.
Exactly. And for me, that I call it, look, she made it, that type of feeling.
Yeah, that's a very positive one and motivating one, I believe. So thanks so much, Jishan, for taking the time today. It's, as usual, a pleasure to speak to you. I long so much for the next opportunity for us to, you know, to hang out in a theater, to take funny selfies, go for dinners, talk to Marcella and the other girls. I can't
Thinking
wait for
about
it.
it makes me happy. We will.
Yes, it's really a positive
Thank
feeling.
you.
We will for sure. So thanks again, and to all
Thanks for
listeners. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, listen to this one, and recommend it. Bye, everyone. Bye,
coming.
Hishan.
Bye, Mirza.
1 hope you liked this episode of Leadaching in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!